Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archery's podcast. Today I will summarize and review the book, A Century of Plenty, A Story of Progress for Generations to Come, is a non-fiction work of economic analysis and strategic optimism by Sven Smit and co-authors, associated with the McKinsey Global Institute. The book examines whether the human progress achieved over the past century can be extended and broadened so that by 200 every country could reach living standards comparable to those of present-day Switzerland. Its central question is ambitious but concrete: can the global economy grow enough, innovate fast enough, and manage physical constraints well enough to deliver broad prosperity without overwhelming the planet? Drawing on research into productivity, technology diffusion, markets, resources, climate, and demography, the authors describe a progress machine that has historically raised incomes and improved human lives. The purpose is not merely to predict a better future, but to argue that plenty is possible if societies deliberately choose policies, investments, and narratives that support productive growth. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, the progress machine links productivity, innovation, diffusion, and markets. A central idea in A Century of Plenty is that the extraordinary gains of the past century were not accidental. The authors describe a progress machine made up of mutually reinforcing forces. Innovation creates new possibilities. Productivity growth allows more output from fewer inputs. Technology diffusion spreads advances across firms and countries, and competitive markets pressure organizations to improve. This framing matters because it treats progress as a system rather than a single invention or policy. A new technology has limited social value if it remains confined to a few leading firms, and rising investment has limited effect if productivity does not improve. Likewise, markets that become too closed or protected can slow the movement of ideas and capital toward better uses. The book uses this system view to explain why past gains in income, health, consumption, and capability could compound over time. It also implies that future plenty requires attention to the connective tissue of growth skills, infrastructure, business dynamism, capital allocation, and institutional openness. The point is not that growth happens automatically, but that societies can strengthen or weaken the mechanisms that convert knowledge into broad improvements in living standards. Secondly, the 200 prosperity scenario tests whether Switzerland-level living standards can become global. The book is organized around a deliberately demanding benchmark, a world in which every person lives at or above the level of prosperity associated with Switzerland today by the end of the century. This is not presented as a casual aspiration. The authors note that such a future would require an economy far larger than the current one, with the global total described in available summaries as roughly 8 times bigger. The value of this scenario is that it forces trade-offs into the open. If billions more people are to enjoy high-quality housing, mobility, healthcare, education, and consumption, then the question is not only moral or political, but also material and productive. Can enough energy be generated, enough food be produced, enough minerals be supplied, and enough innovation be sustained? By using a high-income benchmark, the book avoids a narrow definition of development as mere poverty reduction. It asks whether abundance can be generalized. The scenario also reframes inequality between countries as a question of productive capability. Poorer nations would need faster growth, technology adoption, and institutional capacity, while richer nations would need to maintain innovation and support a cleaner, more efficient growth model. Resource sufficiency is treated as a constraint to solve, not a reason to abandon growth. A distinctive feature of the book is its refusal to separate the growth question from the physical economy. The authors directly address whether an eightfold expansion of global output could be compatible with limits in energy, food, metals, minerals, and environmental capacity. Their argument, based on the available descriptions, is that resource constraints are real, but not necessarily prohibitive if innovation, investment, substitution, efficiency, and clean power scale rapidly. This distinguishes the book from simple technological optimism. It does not claim that materials or climate concerns disappear because economies become richer. Instead, it emphasizes that a prosperous and innovative world may be better equipped to solve environmental problems than a stagnant one. The discussion of climate appears especially important. The authors argue that reinvesting the proceeds of growth in clean energy could support broad prosperity while limiting warming. Even if the path is difficult and full net zero by mid-century is viewed skeptically in related commentary. The reasoning is practical. Growth increases demand, but it can also increase the means to decarbonize production, improve grids, develop storage, change industrial processes, and use resources more efficiently. Plenty, therefore, depends on changing the composition of growth, not simply expanding old patterns. Fourthly, progress is presented as a choice shaped by narratives and institutions. A Century of Plenty argues that achieving abundance is not just a technical calculation. The authors repeatedly emphasize that progress is a choice, meaning that societies must want to build, innovate, invest, and adapt. This claim gives the book a cultural and political dimension. If younger generations come to see growth mainly as harmful, extractive, or impossible, then the coalitions needed for infrastructure, technology deployment, housing, clean energy, and industrial renewal may weaken. The authors therefore call for a narrative in which growth is treated as good when it improves lives and expands human capability. That argument does not eliminate the need for regulation or environmental discipline. Rather, it suggests that pessimism can become self-fulfilling if it reduces willingness to experiment and build. Institutions matter because they determine whether productive effort is rewarded, whether new firms can challenge incumbents, whether capital flows to useful projects, and whether public systems can support long-term investment. The book stands out by linking economic optimism to agency. It does not merely forecast improvement. It asks whether citizens, firms, and governments will maintain the social confidence needed to make improvement probable. Lastly, the policy agenda centers on capacity, diffusion, contestability, and lives improved. The practical implications of the book can be summarized as a shift from abstract growth targets to the conditions that make growth socially useful. The authors emphasize building productive capacity, diffusing technology quickly, keeping markets contestable, and measuring progress by improvements in human lives. Each element corrects a common weakness in development debate. Productive capacity matters because consumption promises are unsustainable without the ability to produce more goods and services efficiently. Technology diffusion matters because breakthrough innovation alone can widen gaps if adoption is slow outside leading firms or countries. Contestable markets matter because incumbent protection can reduce experimentation, lower productivity, and delay the spread of better methods. Measuring lives improved matters because gross output is not a sufficient moral endpoint. The relevant question is whether people gain health, opportunity, security, and material comfort. This agenda speaks to both advanced and developing economies. Rich countries face productivity slowdowns, aging populations, and infrastructure bottlenecks. Poorer countries need faster catch-up, human capital, and access to proven technologies. The book therefore treats policy, business strategy, and institutional design as parts of the same growth system rather than separate domains. In conclusion, A Century of Plenty is best suited for readers interested in economic development, productivity, technology, climate strategy, and long-term public policy. Policymakers can use it as a framework for thinking about growth beyond short election cycles, especially the links among infrastructure, innovation, competitive markets, and clean energy investment. Business leaders may find value in its emphasis on capacity building and technology diffusion because it connects corporate productivity to wider social outcomes. Economists, students, and general readers who follow debates about degrowth, sustainability, inequality, or artificial intelligence will find a structured case for why broad prosperity remains possible, while still requiring choices and constraints to be taken seriously. The book stands out from similar works because it combines a very large historical and quantitative ambition with an explicit narrative argument. Many books on progress either defend optimism in broad philosophical terms or focus narrowly on climate, technology, or development. This one links those domains through the question of whether plenty can become global by 200 PMW. Its differentiating feature is the integration of material feasibility, productivity mechanics, and social confidence. Readers do not need to accept every assumption to benefit from the analysis. The intellectual value lies in seeing abundance as a testable systems challenge rather than a slogan, a prediction, or a purely moral hope. If you would like to support Sven Smit, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.